This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome again to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. Remember, this program is also available on carolcobyradio.com. Carol Colby, and that's K-O-B-Y, radio.com. It's an interesting spelling of the name, and oftentimes people put an L and do all kinds of things in it, but it's just four letters, so I hope you remember that. It's not always convenient to listen at noon on Saturdays, but it's wonderful to have the program available and convenient to you at a time that you can listen. Last week, we had on a terrific program, a terrific guest, in my estimation. Wendell Potter was on, and he is the author of the book Deadly Spin. He is the insurance executive, the corporate communications individual who worked for Cigna and resigned as a result of his disturbance in the way the insurance industry was functioning, particularly in relation to healthcare reform. And he was on last week talking about his reasons for resigning and the overview of the insurance industry, the history of healthcare, and how all of this fits into healthcare reform. So if you are going to tune in to carolcobyradio.com, that program is posted, and you will enjoy listening to that. It's also a good preface to today's program because we are going to talk about a major healthcare issue today. And before we get into that, let me remind you, just in case you haven't done anything or it hasn't crossed your mind, those taxes are due in just a couple of days. And you have a few extra days this year. I think it's, April 18th is the deadline, just because of the government having a day off and because of the weekend and the whole thing. So just a final reminder that taxes are due, and if you don't get your taxes in, at least get that extension filed. But back to our program today, we are going to talk about a major healthcare issue and one that isn't always on the top of mind of people. We're going to talk about lymphoma. And joining me today is Ron Skoronski. Ron is a retired businessman. And looking at him across the table, a good-looking, vigorous kind of guy. I know he's a hunter. He just has been fishing recently in Florida, and he's an outdoorsman, very active. And the whole family is, as a matter of fact. I know Ron through his parents. They're neighbors of mine, Bob and Ruth Ann Skoronski. And if the name Bob Skoronski seems familiar to you and you're scratching your head and saying, why do I know that name? If you followed the Green Bay Packers, not only today, but back in the 60s, Bob Skoronski was on that What did they call that? The Golden Team or whatever, with Bart Starr and all of the rest of the guys. Those were my days. And in fact, Ron, I have to tell you, I didn't attend the Ice Bowl, but I attended the championship game in, 1961 or 62, when they played the New York Jets. And it was about 20 below zero, and I was there in the stands. So I remember vividly the Green Bay Packers and their fame continues today, so we're glad, I'm sure you're very pleased at their current success.
Very much so.
Yeah. Well, Ron was diagnosed in 2007 with lymphoma, follicular lymphoma, and as a result has become very involved with the disease, not only in his own concern for his own health, managing it and seeking treatments, but he has established a fund, Forward Lymphoma, to really look more directly into the research of this disease so advancements can continue to be made. And joining Ron is Dr. Brad Call. And Dr. Call is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin. And he's the director of the UW Lymphoma Service and Clinical Research, director for the Hematologic Malignancies for the University of Wisconsin Paul B. Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Call received his medical degree from Tufts University and completed all postgraduate training at the University of Wisconsin. We have quite a cancer center here. The Carbone Clinical Cancer Center is one of, 44, used to be one of 44 in the country that is funded by NIH.
I think the number is 41 and 41 maybe 42 so-called comprehensive cancer centers.
Right. And so they're not all available at every teaching university. These are selected areas in the country. And
that's
so here again.
Yeah, I'm not sure everyone always realizes how lucky we are to have such a world-class cancer center right in our backyard.
Right. And people come from all over to come here for cancer treatment and diagnosis. So first, before we hear Ron's story, tell me, we're going to talk about lymphoma and your research is in lymphoma and hematology. What is lymphoma?
So lymphoma is cancer of lymphocytes, and lymphocytes are a kind of a white blood cell. So we have lots of different kinds of white blood cells in our body that make up part of our immune system. One of the kinds of white blood cells that we possess are called lymphocytes. And like any other cell in your body, they can acquire a mutation that allows them to grow in an out-of-control way. And when you have cells growing in an out-of-control way, you have cancer, usually. So lymphoma is cancer of lymphocytes. It turns out it's more complicated than just that. There are different kinds of lymphocytes in our bodies. There are so-called B cells and T cells and things called NK cells. These are all kinds of lymphocytes. And these cells have different jobs in your immune system. So these are the things that help you fight off infections. So they have different roles to play in health. But when these cells go bad or turn cancerous, then they grow in an out-of-control way. Because most of your lymphocytes live in your lymph nodes, that's usually where lymphoma will manifest, as lymph node enlargement, as these lymphocytes grow and multiply and divide and accumulate inside of lymph nodes. But the reality is that you have lymphocytes everywhere in your body because your immune system needs to be everywhere in your body. So the way I sometimes explain it is that you can think of your immune system as like the military, and the lymph nodes are the bases where the troops live, and the lymphocytes are the troops. So they're in the bases a lot of the times, but they go out on patrol. So they circulate through your lymphatic system. They circulate through your blood. They're in your bone marrow, and they're in your organs. You have lymphocytes in your skin, in your heart, in your liver, in your lungs. So this confuses people at times because sometimes people come in with a due diagnosis of lymphoma, and the disease is in their skin, or it's in their lungs. And people say, oh, you have lung cancer. Actually, no, you don't. You have lymphoma that happens to be in your lungs. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it's usually in lymph nodes, but it can show up anywhere in your body.
When I think of lymphoma, my layperson's knowledge of it is I have heard of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and Hodgkin's disease. And I've had friends who've had Hodgkin's disease. Non-Hodgkin's, the big case that I remember and why it seems familiar to me is because Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, when she became ill, the diagnosis finally was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And of course, that was a very, very sad ending and went rather quickly. And I know other people with lymphoma and they've had it for years and years and years and manage it quite well.
Right. So
can you tell me the difference between the non-Hodgkin's and the Hodgkin's disease?
Sure.
Lymphoma?
So there's lots of ways you can subdivide the heading of lymphoma. And the reality is there's about 50 or 60, depending on where you draw the line, different kinds of lymphomas. But two big broad headings would be Hodgkin's versus non-Hodgkin's. So Hodgkin lymphoma, I should say, this is a distinction that you make under the microscope. In other words, you can't tell just by looking at a person or by how their scans look or by any blood work. This requires a biopsy to know exactly what somebody has. So this is a call that you make after looking at a biopsy under a microscope. So a Hodgkin's disease or Hodgkin lymphoma is a unique kind of lymphoma, and it looks totally different under the microscope than non-Hodgkin's. So that's how the distinction is made. Hodgkin lymphoma typically occurs in young patients. The average age is maybe in the upper 20s or low 30s. And it usually presents in lymph nodes in the chest or an area called the mediastinum, which is between your two lungs. Hodgkin's disease is one of the, quote, better ones to have because the cure rate is very high. So if a patient comes to us with a new diagnosis of Hodgkin's disease, we can quote them a cure rate that could range between 70 and 95% depending upon their individual features. You know, some people come in the door with a new diagnosis of Hodgkin's and the disease is caught very early,
right,
confined to one little area, and their cure rate might be as high as 95%.
And you're using the word cure.
Yeah. So, yeah, when I use the word cure, I mean the disease is gone and never comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Other people might come in with Hodgkin's and have it be much more advanced in lots of lymph nodes, maybe in organs, maybe in the bone marrow, and then the cure rate isn't quite as high, but is still maybe in the 60, 70, 75% range. So we cure the majority of people with Hodgkin's disease.
Okay.
Non-Hodgkin's is much more complicated than Hodgkin's because there's about, like I said, 40, 50 different kinds of non-Hodgkin's. There's a few different kinds of Hodgkin's, but there's lots of different kinds of non-Hodgkin's. So in the category of non-Hodgkin's, some are very aggressive and not super treatable. And so if somebody is unfortunate enough to walk through the door with one of those, for some patients, a life expectancy is very short.
Mm-hmm.
Some non-Hodgkin's are very aggressive, but also quite curable. So an example of that might be a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma called Burkitt lymphoma, which is the fastest growing cancer that we know of. But we can cure probably 60, 70, sometimes 80% of people who come in with Burkitt lymphoma, even though it's highly aggressive. And without treatment, those people can't live more than a few weeks.
We are going to have to stop for a break, and we'll continue this conversation discussion of lymphoma, and I want to hear Ron's story and his personal experience and relationship with the disease. Ron Skowronski is our guest today on All About Living. He is a retired businessman and has been diagnosed in 2007 with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And Dr. Brad Call is also here, and he is an oncologist specializing in lymphoma and hematology at the UW Hospital Paul P. Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and this segment of our program has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. We'll be back with our program right after these messages, so stay tuned.
This is All About Living with Carol Kolbe, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. I'm Carol Kolbe, and we're talking about lymphoma today with guest Ron Skowronski, who is a retired businessman and was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2007. And joining him is Dr. Brad Call. And Dr. Call is an oncologist at the Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center at UW Hospital and Clinics. And obviously, Ron Skowronski is one of your patients, Dr. Call. And before the break, you were explaining the differences between non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and Hodgkin's disease, Hodgkin's being the one that is highly curable, particularly if you can catch it early. And there are, 40-some kinds of the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that each one have their peculiarities and their levels of aggressiveness. So I want to hear, Ron, your personal story. You are a vigorous guy. You're a hunter, outdoors man. You look very, very healthy. What was going on in your life that you decided that you needed to go to a doctor and be checked, or was this just something that you went to the doctor and you found out you were sick? Explain your story.
Well, Carol, I wasn't really sick at all. I was just in for a routine physical.
Mm-hmm.
And during that physical, I had an x-ray done, and a mass showed up in my stomach. And my family physician decided to pursue that a little bit more diligently than maybe some other people might have. And after a series of tests and scans and things, it showed up as lymphoma.
Mm.
And so I have actually never had any major symptoms of lymphoma. And that's, I think, one of the kind of trickier things with lymphoma. It may not appear as symptoms right away. So it was actually about a 2 or 3 month process to kind of actually pin it down as lymphoma.
And you had the fact that they did an X-ray, you there was nothing going on or any sensation?
No, I felt great. I felt great. And it just, by accident, complete accident showed up.
Wow. I can imagine everybody is afraid of that big C word, but can you recall what your sensation was, what you
well,
felt
I'm,
like?
When I'm you, laughing out of nervousness and anything else. I remember very clearly, in fact, I got a call on Friday afternoon from my family doctor, and it's the old, "I'm sorry to tell you" kind of line, which is always hard to hear. And it's always disbelief, I think, for a lot of people. And I couldn't believe it, really. I called back on Monday to hear it again, because I couldn't believe it. I just felt so good, and had it read back to me again on Monday what it was. And then, like a lot of patients, you go to the internet and you hit Google and start Googling information on what you have, which is I'm not sure that's a great idea.
I'm sure
it drives
scared.
A lot of oncologists crazy when you Google it, and the first thing you go to is life expectancy charts and what's going to happen, that kind of thing. And
if you're not scared already,
and I kind of kept it to myself because I wasn't sure who and what to tell to what person. And it was a wild weekend, to say the least, because you're scared.
Mm-hmm.
You're scared because I had no idea what lymphoma was, and you just heard the description from Dr. Call. It's not one of the more well-known cancers, and it's a little bit hard to understand if you're not sure what it is. So it was an interesting couple weeks at the start.
Well, from what I read about it, 540-some thousand people in the United States have lymphoma.
Exactly.
And more cases every year are being diagnosed.
Yeah.
And what was the next step once you got through the basic, the initial shock?
So my family's physician, I've got a great family doctor, Dr. Tom Heiser, here at Associated Physicians. He referred me to UW. And that's when I met Dr. Call, and went through some pathology with him, with some biopsy type things. And then, like most people do in their due diligence, I went and sought some second opinions, went up to Mayo, went to Frederick in Milwaukee, and got opinions there, but realized the best care was right here at home at Carbone, and felt very comfortable with Dr. Call. And came back here and learned what options I might have with the type of lymphoma that I had. And Dr. Call has a great skill of putting things in very plain language for patients, and discussed it with my family, what options I may or may not have to treat what I had, and actually made a decision to enter a clinical trial with Dr. Call.
Mm-hmm.
So we started that process.
What kind of lymphoma were you diagnosed with?
I have follicular lymphoma.
And Dr. Call, can you explain the follicular lymphoma? You were talking before the break about all the various kinds, and follicular is a very definite kind of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Right. Follicular lymphoma is the second most common kind of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and this falls into the group of what we call indolent lymphomas. So you just heard Ron's story about how he was diagnosed, where he actually felt just fine, had no symptoms, and that is not an unusual story. The vast majority of patients I meet with a new diagnosis of follicular lymphoma actually feel great. And the unusual thing about it is once we finish the so-called staging workup, where we sort of figure out where it is in the patient's body, it's usually everywhere, which just goes to show it's sort of a slow-moving, insidious kind of a cancer. And because it doesn't give symptoms, there's no reason for patients to suspect they have this. So usually by the time the diagnosis is made, it's advanced. The cancer is advanced, and the patients have probably been walking around with it for a year or two or three or more by the time they come in. So that's what makes follicular lymphoma peculiar, I guess, relative to other cancers.
Well, do we know what causes it?
We don't. There's some evidence that exposure to pesticides can increase one's risk for lymphoma. And if you look at the incidence of lymphoma, it's gone up pretty dramatically in the last 30 to 40 years. And the rate has increased the most in farming states. But it's gone up everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that, but that's the one environmental thing that we feel fairly confident that that can increase an individual's risk for lymphoma. But by and large, we don't understand why people get lymphoma, which is true of most other cancers, to be honest. I mean, you can link smoking to lung cancer in a lot of cases, but the majority of cancers we see, there's no way you can figure out why that happened to that mm-hmm. person.
Yeah. And what about a genetic factor? Is that a component of lymphoma?
There's probably a small genetic component that increases an individual's risk for getting lymphoma, but it's not like an on-off switch where you have the gene, you get it, you don't have the gene, you don't. It's mm-hmm. not like that. Think of it more like a dimmer switch mm-hmm. where having a certain genetic predisposition might increase your risk for getting lymphoma.
Mm-hmm. But that's true with a lot of diseases.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So with the lymphoma, and in case somebody just tuned in, we're talking about lymphoma on our program today, All About Living, here on 1670 WTDY. Ron Skoronski, who has been diagnosed with lymphoma, is here, as well as Dr. Brad Call, an oncologist with the Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center. And when you say that follicular lymphoma is everywhere, explain again, when you say everywhere, where lymphoma is.
Sure. So usually it resides within your lymph system or within lymph nodes. And so the best way to see somebody's lymph system is to do something called a CAT scan or a CT scan. So we usually do a CAT scan of a patient's chest, abdomen, and pelvis, and it allows us to see the anatomy. And then we can see which lymph nodes are enlarged. And the enlarged lymph nodes certainly have the lymphoma in them. And then you can also see if there's lymphoma in organs like lungs, mm-hmm. liver, kidneys, things like that. And then the final thing we usually do for patients is something called the bone marrow biopsy, where you look inside the bone marrow, which is where all your blood cells are made. And lymphomas often are found in the bone marrow. So that sort of completes the staging evaluation. And in follicular lymphoma, what you usually find is it's in lots of lymph node groups throughout the body, and it's very commonly in the bone marrow. Follicular lymphoma doesn't usually go to organs like liver, kidneys, lungs, things like that. That's usually the more aggressive lymphomas that do that.
Just as a sidebar, so often I know women who have had breast cancer, and they have they determine the cancer and their treatment, and they'll always check to see if it's in the lymph system, if it's in the lymph nodes. And when it's in the lymph nodes connected with breast cancer, is that a form of lymphoma?
No, that's breast cancer that has gone to lymph nodes, which is a completely different situation than lymphoma in lymph nodes.
Okay, so lymphoma is its own cancer,
right.
And other cancers that then turn up in lymph nodes are just that cancer that has gone into lymph nodes.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, how do you go about treating lymphoma, in particular the follicular lymphoma that Ron Skoronski has?
Right. So backtracking a little bit, if somebody comes in with one of these aggressive but curable lymphomas, then we treat very aggressively with multi-agent chemotherapy regimens that have been developed. And you have to treat right away, and you treat for cure. So very often, patients might feel worse before they feel better. But in those situations, if you don't cure the patient, they can't live very long. So you're treating with this goal in mind, and even if the treatment makes the patient feel sick temporarily, that's a small price to pay.
Absolutely.
We go for it. These follicular lymphoma and the other indolent lymphomas are just kind of the opposite of that, which is a very hard counterintuitive thing for patients and families to grasp. So we usually spend a lot of time trying to explain the disease to patients. Follicular lymphoma, unfortunately, in 2011, is not curable. We can give a patient all the drugs we have, all the medicines we have. We can put people in remission pretty easily. But for virtually everybody, it comes back at some point. Might be 2 years later, might be 10 years later. But we've learned the hard way over the years that cure is elusive in follicular lymphoma. So we don't treat for cure. We treat for control. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yes, so management of the
you could think of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. You could think of it like a chronic disease that has to be managed, like diabetes or something like that.
And with our aging population and the many diseases there are, the management of chronic diseases, not only in the instance of follicular lymphoma, but this is becoming a common practice in medicine and one of the ways in which people are treated,
right?
The management or control of a condition. So we're going to stop for a break, and we'll continue the conversation and have you explain a little bit more about the treatment and the treatment that you have been undergoing and how you're feeling through the whole process. Ron Skoronski, Dr. Brad Call. We're talking about lymphoma on All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. And this segment of our program has been brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670. WTDY.
We're back with our program, All About Living, today on Madison 1670 WTDY. Remember, this program will also be posted on carolcobyradio.com, carolcobey, K-O-B-Y, radio.com, as all programs are. My guests today are Ron Skoronski and Dr. Brad Call. Dr. Brad Call is an oncologist specializing in lymphoma at the Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center at UW Hospital. And Ron Skoronski has been diagnosed with follicular lymphoma, and that was back in 2007. And as Dr. Call, you've been describing follicular lymphoma, that there is, while some lymphomas have cures, the word cure cannot be associated with follicular lymphoma. However, you can manage it, and you treat it, and you hopefully can keep it in remission, and if it arises again, then you continue the treatment and try to put it back into remission?
Yeah.
Is that basically it?
That's exactly right, and there's one other caveat in there. Sometimes patients will undergo a period of just observation, which is another counterintuitive concept in cancer. But because follicular lymphoma is not curable, we have to figure out how to manage this disease over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And as I sometimes explain to patients, you know, you can think of the treatments we have for your lymphoma as like a pile of ammunition. And the pile of ammunition is large. We have lots of good treatments for follicular lymphoma, but the pile is not infinite. The supply is not infinite. So you do want to be very thoughtful and judicious about how you use up your ammunition. So sometimes people with follicular lymphoma will have a relatively low tumor burden, if that makes sense. The lymph nodes aren't very big. There's not a lot of it. Maybe it's in lots of places, but it's actually not hurting anything.
Mm-hmm.
And for those patients, we may recommend no treatment at that moment in time, just observation. And sometimes patients can go for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years just under observation, with a cancer growing, but growing slowly, and that's a period of time for that patient with good quality of life, at least physically, and you get to save your ammunition during that period of time. The hard thing is the psychological aspect. You have to convince patients that it's okay to do that, and they have to get comfortable with the idea of living with their cancer, not currently in remission. That's
right.
A hard thing.
I would think so. Tell me, what was your experience, Ron? Were you put on some form of treatment immediately, or were you in this observation period?
Well, I didn't have the personality to do to do the waiting. You know, I would just the way my personality is, I wanted to take some action.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I mentioned before I entered a clinical trial with Dr. Call. And
so that was right away.
Right, right. And ended up getting great results with what we had there. And then actually Dr. Call would be much better at explaining what happened there than I would be.
So recognizing that this watch and wait, or some people call it watch and worry approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this is a paradigm that was established in the 1970s, quite honestly. And we have new drugs now. And so we're interested in testing these new drugs in this early on setting, this so-called watch and wait setting. So when Ron was diagnosed, we just so happened to have a very large clinical trial that was available to us. This is a clinical trial that was being done all over the United States. I wrote the study, and it was testing this drug called rituximab for people with low tumor burden follicular lymphoma. So rituximab is a drug for lymphoma, but it's not a chemical. It's actually a protein, and the protein is in the form of an antibody. So, you know, we all make antibodies to help us fight off infections. Well, this is an antibody that's made in a lab, and the antibody is designed to be infused into a patient's blood, and the antibody will go find the lymphoma cells, and it sticks to the outside of those cells. And when it does that, it tries to trick the patient's immune system into coming attacking the cancer. That's how rituximab works. And the beauty of the drug is that the side effect profile is very favorable. No nausea, no vomiting, no hair loss, infections are rare.
Wow.
So the vast majority of people take this drug and feel just fine while they're getting it. So we like this approach for patients in Ron's situation because he wasn't feeling sick from his cancer and we didn't want to make him feel sick. So we had an intervention in which we could get his cancer into remission and yet maintain a really great quality of life at the same time.
And when you took this drug, did you have any sensation of having something in your system that was making you feel just a little less than par?
I had almost zero side effects. I mean, maybe a slight fever kind of thing. I think Dr. Call kind of hit the nail on the head. It's more of a psychological thing,
mm-hmm.
how you feel, you know, showing up at the chemo room and that kind of thing and wondering what the effect's going to be and hoping for a great outcome, actually.
Well, absolutely. So. Yeah, I can. That just seems normal to me. First of all, the concept of, you know, there's cancer in your system and we're not going to do anything about it. Well, you, as you said in your case, that's not your personality. But then to have the cancer and you get it, it's a kind of a separate culture, isn't it?
I think people also have a misunderstanding of clinical trial. They think that's the last ditch effort when you hear clinical trial, and in this case that wasn't it at all. It was just trying the treatment in a little bit different setting, and it had been a very, very successful treatment in the past. So it was a really happy medium from doing nothing, the watch and worry, so to speak.
Right.
And something more drastic.
Are you still on the drug?
I'm not at this point.
Are you on anything?
No. I actually went to the watch and wait program at this point because I'm so much more comfortable with the lymphoma that I had. I've been educated from Dr. Call, and I can handle it much more easily mentally than I could before.
And you said that it's basically in remission.
I'm not exactly in remission right now. I'm just, you know, just kind of nudged out of it, but I'm in pretty good shape from that standpoint. But I had about a 3-year remission on Rituxan, which is about double the average, so I had a great result.
Excellent.
So,
is this common? How many patients who are put on Rituxan, how many respond favorably to the extent that Ron has?
About 70% of people who get it will go into remission, and on average the remissions, at least in the earlier studies, were lasting about a year and a half or so. So we were happy with the result we got with Ron. And as he mentioned, he did come out of remission, although just barely. I mean, the CAT scans just changed a little bit. And then we talked about it quite a bit about whether to do the Rituxan again. Or, you know, he became more comfortable with this disease and this diagnosis over time. And getting back to that whole theory about saving your ammunition,
mm-hmm.
you know, we decided together that we would just not treat it at this point and just watch it for a while. And, you know, it's every time we see each other in clinic, we just rediscuss where we're at and what are our goals and what do we want to do next. And we just take it one visit at a time.
It's a real balancing act.
Yes.
Real balancing act. One of the things that I've noted in reading about your work, Dr. Call, is you believe that team science is going to be the way to cure cancer. That's a quote from you. And that's basically what these clinical trials that you're involved in this study, you really are, you're not looking for ownership or credit yourself, but you're trying to get the best and the brightest from what is out there looking into this disease and finding the solution to it.
Right. So the study that Ron participated in, I mean, that study needed 550 patients. Well, it would take us 25 years to do a 550-patient study at the Carbone Cancer Center in follicular lymphoma. So this is a study that was done all over the United States. So there's cancer centers from every, you know, corner of the United States joining together to get this work done. And we participate in other center studies. We all help each other out in this way. So there's a good example of team science. Another example would be as it relates to a grant that we just received to look at the factors that would predict why somebody responds to rituximab versus someone who doesn't respond to rituximab. I mean, just think about that fundamental question. Mm-hmm. Why does it work for that person but not work for that person? Mm-hmm. We actually don't know the answer to that. And if we could figure that out ahead of time, well, we could save a lot of wasted time where we're using drugs that are bound to be ineffective in someone. Finding these factors, these are called biomarkers. If you can establish, you know, a biomarker in an individual patient that would predict what drugs would work and work well for them, that's really where we're trying to go in cancer medicine, and that's considered personalized medicine. And it's easy to talk about. It's harder to get there, and it takes a lot of work to identify these things. So the grant that we received, we have collaborated with investigators at in British Columbia, Vancouver, British Columbia, Mayo Clinic, Dana-Farber, and we've all, and at Wisconsin, and we're all doing separate pieces, separate lines of investigation, trying to identify these biomarkers that would predict who will benefit from rituximab, who won't, who will benefit some, who will benefit a lot, that will really help us individualize our therapy in the future.
Are you thwarted a little bit by the economy of today? Well, how is funding going? Are you suffering any kind of cuts or threats of cuts?
Sure. Obviously, you know, there's a gigantic budget crisis in the state of Wisconsin and in the country as a whole. And most of the research for cancer funding comes from the National Institutes of Health and the National Cancer Institute. These are taxpayer-funded entities. Mm-hmm. And understandably, the money is tight right now. So more and more, we're relying on private foundations like the Lymphoma Research Foundation to find funding, or philanthropy. And so to that end, we have established a fund at the University of Wisconsin called the Forward Lymphoma Fund. It was really Ron's brainchild. Mm-hmm. And we use that money to fund innovative research at the University of Wisconsin and beyond, because we make these funds available to collaborators around the world.
Well, that was really significant that you established that fund. So not only are you participating as a patient and going through the clinical trial, but you're making this opportunity available to more people and to hopefully learn more quickly about lymphoma. We need to stop for a break and we'll continue. I want to hear more about the establishment of this fund, Ron, and what the hopes are for the future in the diagnosis and the treatment and the successful cure of all lymphomas, if that's ever a possibility down on the horizon. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. And this segment of our program has been brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
We're back with our last few minutes with Dr. Brad Call, an oncologist at the Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center at UW Hospital, and Ron Skoronski. And Ron Skoronski is a retired businessman who in 2007 was diagnosed with follicular lymphoma. And this is the field of Dr. Call's research and treatment, and the two of them have been working together since 2007. Ron, you've had tremendous results with your participation in a clinical trial on the drug was it Rituxan, and you have gone into almost full remission, but certainly have improved, and you also have been a philanthropist in this area and established the fund of Forward Lymphoma to continue the research opportunities. Dollars are tight now for everybody, and this Forward Lymphoma Fund will combine with the other funds that, Dr. Call, you receive from NIH, from the National Cancer Institute, the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Altogether, there's teamwork going on around the country in cancer researchers trying to find cures and at least positive treatments for cancer. So for your philanthropy, thank you, Ron.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah. Tell me what your feelings are now. It's 2007. That's about 4 years that you have been living with cancer. And going from the initial shock and Googling all about it and going through all of the fears, the escalating fears that I think occur in the first few days and weeks of cancer. How do you feel about it now?
I don't know that I think about it every day. It's always kind of in the back of your mind. My efforts and thoughts are more about, I'm very serious about finding a cure. I know some people think that's a little altruistic. I don't feel that way at all. It's the reason that we founded Ford Lymphoma. I have a lot of confidence in Dr. Call's approach, the team science approach, that somebody's going to find it. I don't know why it can't be us. We have the research people and facility right here to be a great part of that. I'm not afraid to ask for a donation from friends and family to get it done. I think we've made great, great strides here at UW. And
You have a microphone right now, so why don't you explain your pitch?
All you have to do is log on to www.forwardlymphoma.org, and you could follow what we do and how we do it. I've been overwhelmed with the generosity of people here in Madison and in the state. Not surprisingly so, it's one of the reasons we live in this community, my family and friends. But I'm a competitive person, and I don't like to lose, and I feel that way about the lymphoma thing, kind of me against it. I've really felt that I've used the line that lymphoma is kind of the Rodney Dangerfield of cancers. It doesn't get the respect it
doesn't
deserves.
Doesn't get any. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's so many great models of how things can be fought. The breast cancer thing with Susan G. Komen, they're such a great model, and they've done such a wonderful job that that should be maybe a way we should try to do it. But it's been really enjoyable getting to learn about it and know the researchers at UW. I look at it a lot differently, but I would never tell you that I've lost the whole fear of it. I'm not looking forward to the things that I will be going through. But at the same time, I'm a lot more comfortable with it. I've got a great caregiver system with my sister and my brother and my parents. And I enjoy a great friendship with Dr. Call and some of the people at UW. And so it makes it a little bit easier that way.
Hasn't that been inspiring to get to know the people at UW and truly learn about the excellence that exists right here in our own community?
Well, very much so. And that was never my plan to get to know the folks that way. But I think they know that I'm very serious about it, and I want to be part of the team so in a certain way. Obviously, I'm not a scientist or that kind of thing, but I want to know about it. I want to learn about it. I think our family is the same way. We want to learn about it and know and be on the cutting edge of what goes on with it, and so we're knowledgeable when we come in to visit and try to ask good questions, and I am very sympathetic to other people who are going through this. Mm-hmm. It's not easy putting your health out in the public eye. It's hard to.
I credit you for doing this, being in
the paper or on the radio. I'm a very private person, but if that's the way we're going to get closer to a great treatment or a cure, let's do it. Because it's hard in lots of ways for lots of people, and it's.
How have you changed as a person? Or has this changed you at all?
I think it's changed me some. I'm obviously closer to my family. I'm closer to my friends. I hope I tell them more regularly how I feel and what I think, how much they mean to me. I am a lot more sympathetic to what people go through.
Have you changed your priorities or which battles are important?
I think so. This is a big deal to me. The cancer thing is a big deal to me. Mm-hmm. If it's not number one, it's 1A.
Well, sure.
So everybody has a cancer story. Every single person does. It's a real common bond amongst everybody you meet, and there's not a lot of happy ones. And I'd sure like to turn that around if we could.
Well,
and
you
like
found out that you're not alone.
Right.
Yeah. That,
right.
And that's very helpful.
So,
what is the prognosis, Dr. Call? What kind of hope is there with the funds that Forward Lymphoma is providing and the other research dollars and the ongoing research? What do you see from your professional perspective on the horizon?
Well, we're obviously very optimistic about what we can do with these dollars. And one of the things that we've really tried to focus on is developing new techniques to study the tumor tissue from actual cancer patients to learn about what's going wrong inside those cells. Historically, researchers have used what are called cell lines in mouse models. And what we've learned the hard way over the years is that those things don't always recreate perfectly what's happening in our patients. And I think that slowed our research a little bit. And it turns out studying the tissues from patients is tricky for lots of reasons that I won't get into here. But it's very tricky, but that's been a huge emphasis of ours, is unraveling the biology of lymphomas by going to the source, and that's the tumor tissues, the biopsies that we get from our patients.
Cancer as a whole, is there a thread linking all cancers together? And is there truly one solution out there for all cancer?
Definitely not. It's kind of a depressing statement, but I do believe this is close to the truth. Cancer is sort of like snowflakes. There's no two that are exactly alike. Even two follicular lymphoma patients don't have the exact same kind of cancer. They don't have all the same things going wrong inside their cancer cells. And that's one of the reasons that we haven't made more progress in cancer over the past, 30, 40, 50 years. But now that we understand that, that brings us back to this whole idea of personalized medicine and really understanding what is unique about a particular individual's cancer and what strategy or treatments or approach would work best for them, because it's not always the same, from one follicular lymphoma patient to another follicular lymphoma patient, or one breast cancer patient to another breast cancer patient.
You're so much into the concept of team working together, and we have less than a minute, but do you see this as a real hopeful approach for all cancers and diseases in general, that there is a need for more teams of people working together?
This is the paradigm that we have to adopt. I think in the past, the way that the grants were awarded resulted in the formation of silos where individuals are working in their own laboratory but not really interacting with the rest of the world. And we want to do away with that model. And we're not going to worry about turf. We're not going to worry about credit. We just want to cure cancer, and we're going to do whatever it takes to accomplish that.
Ron Skoronski, Dr. Brad Call, thank you so much for being with us today. Ron, my hat's off to you, first for your willingness to communicate publicly about your cancer and the philanthropy and the generosity that you have expressed in your donation and beginning Forward Lymphoma. And I wish you continued success in your research and treatment of not only lymphoma patients, but other cancer patients and patients in general. You're a wonderful physician, and I suspect you have a very good bedside manner. Thank you so much for listening to All About Living. You've been listening to Madison 1670 WTDY, CarolColbyRadio.com. Now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.